Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We always believe in empowering people. That means providing information that can help us live a longer life, prevent disease, and look at all the different options if we choose some combination of natural or alternative with complementary or not. So today, using the finest scientific references, we're going to show you how to improve your kidney blood flow and blood pressure with a natural nutrient, and how chocolate could help a particular condition a lot of people suffer from, and give your kidneys a break by doing what? I'll share that. And new evidence that green tea may help improve bone health. And zinc deficiency, it's a big deal because so many people are deficient. And sweet potatoes improve your health. And what else do they do? I'll share all that and a lot more on health and healing. And one of the reasons that I always cite the study or the university where it was done or where it was published is because I want people to know that the best information on natural healing and prevention is simply supported by good quality science. And why? Because way back when I was doing a debate, I'm talking about the very beginning of my career, one of the doctors I was debating, this was down in Atlanta, Georgia, and it turns out he was sponsored by the Coca-Cola company, and that their headquarters is in Atlanta. I didn't know that. I didn't know that they were supporting him. I found out later. But he kept emphasizing the fact that everything about health was all hearsay and anecdotal, but everything about medicine was scientific. Turns out that most of that's just the opposite, that reality always supersedes scientific verification. So I just want, for those of you who are coming on board for the first time, and we have a lot of new listeners, you can have confidence in the information we share. Also today, we're going to play an audio interview with a law professor. He's going to explain why you should not talk to the police. Now, he is joined by a major, you know, highly respected police officer. And you'll hear the two points of view. Why? Because if you've been listening for any period of time, you know that I believe and have the irrefutable evidence that we are becoming a totalitarian, fascistic regime. That does not mean that the average American has all their freedoms in any way usurped it. It means that those in power at the corporate level and those in power at the federal and state level are using that power to look at the rest of us who are willing to challenge them. If we challenge about vaccines, if we challenge about cutting down the great forests, if we challenge about polluting our water, if we challenge about feeding our kids junk foods and causing disease, we're now considered domestic terrorists. We're all on watch lists. Who knew that every single email, cell phone, every electronic communication was monitored? And it was not legal. Was anyone held accountable? Did anyone go to trial? Nope. But tell the truth about corruption that you see as a witness inside the government, and even as a whistleblower, you'll be attacked. So that's why I'm going to be playing you this, because we assume that, hey, if we're asked anything by the police, it's they're there to protect and serve. And indeed, I believe there was a time when the majority did that. I don't believe that by any means that all police officers are there in any way to harass, arrest, ridicule, or harm us. But today, you'd better know what your rights are. So today, knowing your rights, if you're ever stopped by the police for any reason, or they come to your house or apartment, any reason, you'll know what to do. Also today, we're going to hear from George Carlin about question everything. Why shouldn't we take the experts' opinions as a gold standard? No, you shouldn't. And if you do, you're making a big mistake. So we'll listen to what George Carlin has to say on that and see what would happen if a soda company kept it real in commercials. So that's what we've got lined up for you. And plus, I'm going to give you my opinion of when Hillary Clinton has come out now and said that she's a citizen activist. Really? So what exactly are you going to put your energy into? And what have you done in your own career as the co-president with your husband for 8 years, as senator from New York State, and as secretary of state? What did you do that we who are real activists would be concerned about? A special commentary. So let's begin. The first thing we're going to do is look at an article from the Journal of Hypertension. That's high blood pressure. And they have found that a combination of the omega-3 fatty acids and coenzyme Q10 can decrease blood pressure and heart rate in kidney disease patients. And people with chronic kidney disease, which increase the risk of heart disease by almost 500%, experience improvement in both blood pressure and heart rate following 4 grams of the omega-3 fatty acids, is 4,000 milligrams. And further, when taken in combination with coenzyme Q10, the blood pressure reduces significantly and you get enhancement. So that's all good. Quote from this study, "The finding of an interreaction between omega-3 fatty acids and coenzyme Q10 on blood pressure is difficult to explain in view of the lack of effect of Q10 alone on blood pressure and needs to be confirmed. However, when taken together," and this is what's interesting, "when you take the two together, you get a synergistic effect." And this was a double-blind, placebo-controlled intervention. Chocolate. Now, there's different types of chocolate. There's the best, which is the organic cacao. And then there is the chocolate that has milk, like your milk chocolate, and sugars, simple refined carbohydrates. And that's what most people consume. But for those of you who are into health, you know that you can get a lot of natural, organic, even raw chocolates, and those are very good. How good? Well, according to this International Headache Society's International Headache Congress in Philadelphia, quote, "To our knowledge, this is the first evidence for the use of cacao, which is chocolate, as a dietary supplement to cause an upregulation of the anti-inflammatory proteins and cytokines, as well as repress expression of acute and chronic inflammatory responses within the ganglia. In lay language, chocolate eases migraines." How about that? So, and it didn't take a lot of chocolate to do it, but there was a really nice improvement in that. And we know the chocolate's rich in phytonutrients. So that's probably what it does. And something else for your kidneys, if you were to lose weight and stay on a healthy diet, exercise, and give up the sugar, you could give your kidneys a major break. Remember, the kidneys filter waste products from the blood and excrete them in the urine. So when damaged, their ability to perform these vital tasks are not what they would be otherwise. So you want to make sure that you're drinking lots of healthy water, clean water, drinking healthy organic juices, and then also making sure that you're giving yourself the benefit of losing weight. Because the more weight you have that you shouldn't have, the greater the effort of getting rid of all of those toxins from your kidneys. Green tea. Talk a lot about it. The Journal of Agriculture and Food Chemistry has an article published in Science Daily that shows that it can improve bone health. Well, that's good when you consider how many Americans have osteoporosis or brittle bones. And they found that it made a big difference. In fact, quote, "They found that one in particular, EGC, boosted the activity of key enzymes that promote bone growth by up to 79%. So take your green tea. My suggestion is that you're going to have 200 to 400 milligrams of the important metabolites. These are called catechins, C-A-T-E-C-H-I-N-S, and epigallocatechins. These chemicals that are in the green tea, this is what helps your bones. Also, we found that we need zinc, and most people don't realize how important zinc is, but this study showed that over 2 billion people worldwide are zinc deficient, and zinc is very important because it helps your immune system. So make sure that you're getting, I would suggest, anywhere from 10 to 20 milligrams of zinc a day. That's not difficult to do. Also, one of the most beneficial foods you can eat are sweet potatoes. Why? The latest study shows that sweet potatoes can lower blood pressure. They can help you if you have ulcers. And it's even good if you have problems with your liver. So sweet potatoes, easy to make, delicious. You can make a sweet potato soup. And what you can do, you can take some fresh organic corn and take some pine nuts, which are called bignolias, and lightly, ever so lightly, saute them with some toasted sesame oil and some Himalayan sea salt and sesame seeds together. And then you use that as your topping on your sweet potato. Very tasty. Blue-green algae and spirulina are two of the most important nutrients we can take into our body. These are ideally really superfoods, and they are rich in amino acids, and they're rich in vitamin A and vitamin C, E, and B complex, but it's their chlorophyll that I think is their most beneficial aspect. Yes, they're right up there with milk as far as calcium, magnesium, good sources of iron, but it's the antioxidants they also have. And antioxidants aid in the elimination of toxins and free radicals, and that helps your body fight disease and stay healthy. It's spirulina and blue-green algae are highly effective at detoxing. So let's just say that someone comes to see me and they haven't been living an ideal life as far as health. And we do an analysis and we find out they've got heavy minerals, metals like cadmium, mercury, lead, iron, excessive amounts. You want to chelate those out. So by taking vitamin C, an easy-to-use vitamin C that's naturally buffered, and take, like, say, one or two scoops of a spirulina or blue-green algae or both, and put it into a smoothie and you drink that, that's going to help detoxify the liver. And it also has, especially spirulina, it has what is called cyclocyanin, and which is has anti-cancer properties as well. And in their essential amino acids, they're way up there. They have more protein than soybeans. So they're also rich in what is called GLA, gamma-linolenic acid. That's an essential fatty acid which aids in our joints and our heart. And it also is good for appetite and stabilizing your blood sugar. So a lot of people don't know about spirulina. They might have heard of it, don't know what it does. Just one more reason to have it. Also, from the American Association for the Advancement in Science, they had a presentation about living near trees, that it improves physical, mental, and social health. Quote, humans are evolved organisms and the environment is our habitat. That's according to Francis Coe of the study. Now, as human societies become more urban, we as scientists are in a position to look at humans in much the same way that those who study animal behavior have looked at animals in the wild to see the effects of changing habitat on the species. What this means is that they've taken a look and they have found that animals, when they're caged up, they become more aggressive. They have disrupted parenting skills. And when they're in the wilds, completely different. There are lots of studies that show that the more plants that we're around, the more trees, the more green space, the more relaxed we are, the less stressed we are, the healthier we are. We need these natural habitats. Now, if you live in Manhattan, you have Riverside Drive. You also have the Central Park. And you have the East River. So you're never too far away from a place where you can sit and enjoy nature. I think Central Park is just one of the finest places anywhere to relax and enjoy nature. So get your green time in. It's important. Also, turmeric. You hear me talk a lot about turmeric because it's one of the most studied supplements in the world. It's a spice. And from the turmeric, you're getting the yellow gold spice. It's mainly used in Indian dishes, but it's also part of traditional Asian medicine as well. But inside that, you get curcumin. And curcumin is this really powerful phytochemical. Cure, C-U-R, cumin, C-U-M-I-N. And new research at the Jean Mayer Human Nutrition Research Center on Aging at Tufts University have found another really good benefit for turmeric. The curcumin it contains appears to reduce weight and suppress the growth of fat tissue. This was published in the Journal of Nutrition, and just one more reason to have it. There's a lot of other good reasons, too. It's one of the best anti-inflammatories in the world. You can take curcumin and turn off inflammation in the brain, in the joints, in the muscles. Also, vitamin K supplementation slows coronary artery calcification. This is in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. Researchers at the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Human Nutrition Research Center on Aging at Tufts University, along with National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute and Massachusetts General Hospital, found that the vitamin K1 helps retard the progression of coronary artery calcium in individuals with pre-existing disease. And increased coronary artery calcium has been demonstrated to predict cardiovascular disease and cardiovascular death. This was a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial. So make sure you're getting your 1 to 2 milligrams of vitamin K1. And I read an article by Ari LaVos of Aldernet about milk and how it may endanger your health, and the dairy industry knows it. What he says is this, that there's a mutant protein that has invaded the world's dairy supply, including most likely the milk in your refrigerator. The protein is called A1 beta casein. It's well known in the scientific community, and while most dairy companies and trade groups and government agencies consider it harmless, there is a body of evidence that implicates A1 beta casein in diabetes, heart disease, autism, and schizophrenia. And the original mutation occurred several thousand years ago, causing cow zero and its offspring to produce milk in which the amino acid histidine occupies the 67th position on the beta casein protein found in solid milk. The amino acid proline, proline, occupies that position in the non-mutant original form of the A2 protein. Today, the average vessel of milk contains milk from many cows with a mixture of both A1 and A2 beta casein, and that's where the problem is. So, one more reason not to have milk. And by the way, there's more than 100 peer-reviewed studies to present compelling evidence that A1 milk poses substantial health risks. We could have coconut milk, almond milk, cashew milk, rice milk, soy milk, lots of alternatives, so we don't need it. So that's the latest on health and healing. We're 20 minutes into the program. Back in a minute. Please stay with us. All of us should be concerned about those in power and how they use that power. we should also be diligent and take a look back at their promises to get into power and what they've done with that. Have they honored their word or have they betrayed us? Now, we've done that. We've actually taken the time to look back at all the presidents going back through Eisenhower and see what were their principal concerns, what were people really wanting to see happen, and did they honor it or not? Most did not. And certainly Clinton and Bush and Obama did not. But now out comes Hillary Clinton, and she first makes one presentation this week on television showing that she would have won the election had it not been for James Comey releasing a report and then WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. But at no point does she take personal responsibility that maybe she's not liked by a lot of people. Maybe there are a lot of activist women who do not believe that she supports women's rights. To the contrary, based upon her support of Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, and Yemen, where women have had almost no rights. In fact, women have been equated almost as non-entities. The male in that society dictates everything. And then the consequences of that. There are also human rights activists who have public forums and have spoken out about how if you really care about children, then why did you and your husband, when you were in power, allow sanctions in Iraq that caused 500,000 to 650,000 children to die? And Madeleine Albright, in an interview on 60 Minutes with Leslie Stahl, said, "When is that acceptable?" She said, "Yes." Well, it wasn't acceptable to the children, you know, who died. So there are a lot of reasons, being a corporatist. So when she says that that's the only reason that she lost, I just believe that she is tone deaf, but you have to understand the other side of it. Every single major think tank and political group, including the far right, including the known neocons, including the military-industrial complex with its 400,000 contractors representing several million employees, the pharmaceutical-industrial complex, the financial complex on Wall Street, where her husband and her had been lecturing, getting massive fees, the food industry like Cargill and Monsanto, and the shops like Walmart. Everybody supported her in corporate America. Does that tell you anything? Shouldn't that give you a moment to pause when the military-industrial spy complex is in your corner? When no one is in Trump's corner, except the people who voted for him, but everybody was against him. The media was for her and against him. So when you have those people saying, "We want you in power," a reasoned response would be, why? What would be the quid pro quo? What are you allowing these people to get away with if you're in power that they're willing to support you? But that question wasn't asked. Yes, because it wasn't asked, it wasn't answered. But now she's come forward and telling us all the things they're against, but nothing that they're for. There's a big difference. Right now in America, we have so many people who seem to have lost perspective that were motivated not just by fear, but rather by hope. What can we reasonably look forward to that can allow us to live a better life, a longer life, a better society, a safer society? And people are optimists at heart. They want a better future. That's why they keep voting for the wrong people, because the wrong people keep promising them hope and change. It just doesn't happen. And then one day they realize, well, I voted for you, and you didn't do anything, so I'm going to vote for someone else. So we've compiled an accurate historical look at what has been the actual achievements of Hillary Clinton, because now she's gone one step further. Now her whole idea is, and her followers, she is the ultimate activist, citizen activist. Really? Wow. Could have fooled me. For those of us who've been real activists our entire life and have stuck to our principles and been uncompromising, when it comes to truth, we never saw you. Where were you at? On which issues? So we decided to take a look. because it looks like she's going to be put up again to run and try to do a makeover on making her seem more warm and people-friendly than she actually is. Let's take the issues that people are concerned with. First, on the economy. I gave, on one of my recent programs, I gave the actual debt clock. I showed how much states, communities, individuals, mortgages, student loans, car loans, federal government, interest, unfunded entitlements, all this adds up to over $170 trillion. She hasn't said a word about how she would do massive debt forgiveness. Now, you say that's not possible. I say, yes, it is. Do your homework. A lot of debt that we're paying actually is debt to the federal government or debt to banks that have never given us the money to begin with but are the beneficiaries of getting the return on that. Forgive all that. You say, well, how's that possible? Well, we forgive $16 trillion debt to corporations. We were giving them up to $90 billion a month for years. We gave them initially $700 billion under the TARP program, and then quietly, secretly, Citicorp got $2.2 trillion. The Wall Street firm Goldman Sachs got over $800 billion. J.P. Morgan Chase, they all got hundreds of billions or trillions of dollars. They were forgiven of all their debt. So if we forgive corporate debt, there's no reason we can't forgive student loan debt. That's only $1.3 trillion. That would be a small amount. In fact, that's less than the interest that we're paying on all this debt. So we can forgive that. So we can forgive a lot of debt. We could also reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act. Now, those of us who are have a background in economics or business and believe that we should be activists economically, we want to see the reinstatement of the Glass-Steagall Act that separated the savings and loans from the investment banks. Hence, we would have less of the bank insolvencies unless they engaged in casino capitalism and derivatives, and we would make it a law that no derivatives would be allowed to be sold. After all, they're not real. They're merely bets that something's going to go up and something's going to go down, and they pay a tiny fraction, under 1% of the face value. But when it's redeemed 100 cents on the dollar, even if they only paid 1/10 of one penny on the dollar. That's how it works. And now we're back into that. Is she for that? No. She does not want to see the Glass-Steagall Act reinstated. Who caused the Steagall Act to be taken away? Her husband and her. I see. And who benefited? Well, everyone affiliated with them, including their Secretary of the Treasury, Robert Rubin, and also Larry Summers. So all of her so-called expert economists were wrong. They were wrong at every level. And so she and her husband are supposed to be these wunderkinds. Well, it's not difficult to say that they're very good at profiting for themselves, but not the rest of the economy. So the progressives, including this as a key point in the Green Party platform, even Bernie Sanders, and the nonpartisan economists such as Michael Hudson, Naomi Prinz, and others have said, get back to Glass-Steagall. She's not going to do that. She also has never been an activist against Citizens United or corporate personhood. But the responsive people like Public Citizen, ACLU, Green Party, we are all wanting to reverse Citizens United through legal channels. On trade, is she an activist? No, she supported the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TIPP partnerships, sometimes compromised on breaking them into two separate smaller agreements, but the issues would have stayed the same. She was responsible with her husband for NAFTA, as well as the World Trade Organizations. She does not want to see any reform or repeal of any of our trade agreements. Well, then how is that being an activist? She would oppose amendments to Taft-Hartley Act that would strengthen unions. And yet progressives, true activists, we have massively opposed the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Small farmers, labor unions, and liberal trade groups, Public Citizen, Greenpeace, Global Justice Movement, World Socialist Forum, the International Forum on Globalization, Council of Canadians with Maude Barlow, we're all of the same mind. Strengthen unions and eliminate all these trade agreements. She's never addressed student loan debt forgiveness or suitable ways to lessen the debt load on graduating students. Her idea is, well, let's give a better way of them repaying the money. No, you're not saying pay less. You're just saying pay it over a different period of time, but they're still paying compounding interest. That is not acceptable. Then other economic issues. She wants to expand the World Trade Organization, which is a pure 100% promotion of corporate globalization. She wants to support the too big to fail banks. They should not be broken up, as many of us have wanted. And she is not. She wants to reinstate the H-1B visa that Trump was trying to get rid of. And also she would continue with payday loans support. And some of those payday loans start at 100% and go to 1,000% interest. On foreign policy, she embraces the doctrine of neo-full-spectrum dominance of U.S. military global hegemony. She continues with Obama's $1.2 trillion plan being expanded by Trump to pursue new nuclear weapons policy as aggressive acts against China and Russia. She's a major supporter of NATO. Remember, it was her and her husband that lied about the reasons that Yugoslavia should be bombed. And in the end, the Milosevic was found innocent of all charges of war crimes. But the media didn't cover that. They just covered the balkanization of that area. And they knew they were using depleted uranium. They have never once acknowledged the dangers that that leaves the people living in that area, breathing the air, eating the food from the soil that depleted uranium is on. Also, there's no reduction in the Pentagon military budget under her. And if you think $59 billion increase by Trump is much, you couldn't imagine how much more she would do. She wants to further expand NATO on Russia's borders. She calls Russia the number one enemy. Well, go to Russia. Speak with the Russian people. Ask them, would you support war? The answer is no. They wouldn't support war for the older people because they suffered more than any other nation during World War II. They lost tens of millions of people. And for the younger people, they're educated. They're moving on up. They have a standard of living. Now, you can challenge the personality of Putin. You can challenge how much money he's kept for himself, and you'd probably be right. But he has brought prosperity to Russia that Russia has never seen in its history. He does not want a war. He does not want to destroy that. So you would think that someone who was Secretary of State would have used détente, diplomacy. That's not in her vocabulary. And it wouldn't be in the future. Also, she wants to expand NATO outside of the European arena, definitely into Africa and even into Asia. She would continue U.S. aggression against the Middle Eastern countries that are not in alignment, like with Assad. And look at what she did with Libya. She would continue to find ways to support al-Qaeda and al-Nusra. And she also would continue to increase the economic and military strengthening of Israel, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Egypt. Now, what do all four of those countries have in common? They all support terrorism, and they are dangers to world peace. Also, what about the Ukraine, Haiti, Pakistan, Kenya, Nigeria, Uganda, and others have unsafe food and promise that food security is threatened in their future by promoting and trying to enforce GMOs and Monsanto's industrial chemical empire. So she doesn't support the average person in these countries. She supports the corporations that are exploiting them. She supports the transnational class interest in influencing regime change in Latin America. She has been a part of the program to undermine Ecuador, Venezuela, Bolivia, and Honduras. She has done nothing and would do nothing to lessen Israel's apartheid of Palestine. She's given carte blanche permission for Israel to continue its expansion into Palestine to create a single Jewish state. It is my opinion that if she were elected president, within 24 months of her being elected, Israel would use that opportunity to use its new nuclear weapons against Iran. And we would have a major war. We'd have World War III. She also would continue Obama and Trump's drone war and executive orders for assassination. She would continue raping Africa's natural resources through the U.S. multinationals and military expansion into the continent via AFRICOM. Yet look at the real activists, the true activists, the progressive activists, the anti-war Iraq veterans, war against the war, Pink, Code Pink, Green Party, Peace and Freedom Party, Central Committee for Conscientious Objectors, the Quakers, Tycoon, Rabbi Michael Lerner, Women for Peace, Counterpunch, Common Dreams, Consortium News, Military Family Speak Out, and War Resisters League, among others. No. Everything that Hillary Clinton stands for, as Barack Obama stood for, they're opposed to. And look at her domestic national security. She would continue to expand the Patriot Act. She would continue to defend the National Defense Authorization Act, already being expanded by Trump through executive orders. That means more domestic spying on American citizens. Given her disdain for Julian Assange and Snowden, and earlier Chelsea Manning, I believe she would continue her aggressive stance against whistleblowers and any form of domestic dissent and protest. Independent journalism, she can't stand because she can't control it. New York Times, that's easy. Washington Post, CNN, MSNBC, these are people pretending to be objective journalists. They're not. They're not stupid. They're well-educated. They're good at their craft. But can they be trusted? The answer is unequivocally no, and she knows that. She would simply ignore the militarization of law enforcement, allow it to continue. She'd have no guarantee of internet freedom, rather an expansion of internet data collection and censorship. And look at what the true progressive activists, the ACLU, Public Citizen, the Green and Justice Parties, Electric Frontier Foundation, Global Network Initiative, Internet Freedom Consortium, Save the Internet, and Human Rights Watch. They're all opposed to her on every level. Then domestic policy, she would continue the deadlock in campaign financial reform. She doesn't want to see third parties. They would eat her alive in any debate. That's why if you had Jill Stein talking with Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, you would think that two of those three got a lobotomy before the debate. She would continue to refuse to regulate Big Pharma's drug price gouging and the cost of geriatrics or generics, and her ties with Big Pharma support national vaccine mandates. And yet look at the entire anti-vaccine community. It's millions of people. The National Vaccine Information Center, numerous researchers and doctors, toxicologists and immunologists, they're real activists. She's not. Can you name me a single original investigative report she's ever done in her career? Name me one. Show it to me. I've looked at her record. Yet we've had over 300 broadcasts, live original stories. That's real activism. Her and her husband should just go away. Someone should write him a check for $10 trillion and say, now, please just go someplace. But they won't. She'll still have those same corporatists who have an interest, financial, political, and ideological interest, in staying attached to her. She is opposed to medical marijuana. She wants to keep pot illegal. She wants to continue the war on drugs. And yet every progressive individual in America knows that the war on drugs is a failure. It should never have happened, just like prohibition from the Environmental Working Group and those that advocate, medical physicians included, that we do what other countries have done, including Portugal, and legalize all drugs. You stop the cartels, you stop the crime. Oh, but I forgot. What about all those private prisons that are guaranteed a certain number of inmates, and that's how they make their money, and they're big donors to Clinton? I see. And since her days at the Rose Law Firm, through her husband's presidency and as a senator and the Secretary of State, she's consistently supported Monsanto. She doesn't want GMO labeling. She supports genetic engineering. But look at all of the Organic Consumer Association, Food and Water Watch, Food Democracy Now, who are opposed to that. She's likely will increase White House intelligence influence on reporting in major newsrooms. She would use the uproar over fake news during the last election as a means to further control government-supported news only. She wants further corporate influence over publicly funded airwaves and mainstream media in general, whereas the ACLU, the Freedom of the Press Foundation, FAIR, PR Watch, Consortium News, Chris Hedges, Henry Giroux, Cornel West, Committee to Protect Journalists, Reporters Without Borders, those are true activists who truly care about freedom of the press and integrity in journalism. She doesn't. She would oppose Trump care, yes, but look at, she was responsible for helping to sell Obamacare. And there's no chance in the world she would support real single-payer health insurance coverage, which we need. And look at the Physicians for National Health Program. They're real activists. She's not. Also, she supports hydrofracking. She supports the subsidized gas and oil pipelines. She pushed for Obama's nuclear power that would roll back coal, as Obama had done. She supports Trump's offshore deep oil drilling. In fact, the Clinton Foundation received a lot of money from those people. We'd be forced to support the federal funding of renewable and green energies, but they would be minor. Fossil fuels would get the majority. And also on social reform, she would be against the Green Party, Union of Concerned Scientists, Greenpeace, Earth Institute, Friends of the Earth, Center for Biological Diversity, Committee Against Oil Exploration, Oceana, Environmental and Energy Study Institute, Sierra Club, Food and Water Watch, Environmental Working Group, Rainforest Alliance, Earth Island Institute, Post Carbon Institute. Publications like Oil Drum and Oil Price are all against Hillary Clinton's positions on this. As an advocate of neoliberalism, profiteering, corporatization, commodification, and private profits, she will support 100% growing the private prison industry, incarceration, prison labor being exploited, with no prison reform or education. Also, she does not support free public education at the college and university level. She would simply allow Trump policy supporting charter schools over public education to continue. She would continue draconian federally funded educational policies that focus on like stupid programs like Head Start that her husband founded. Any law that would strengthen the powers of the courts to keep people in check is on her table. If oppressing citizens, debt prisons, increasing private revenues, that is what she supports. Also, there's no substantial effort to increase public housing with federal funds on her agenda, and no effort to rein in cowboy real estate speculators, many of whom are her friends and supporters. Unlike Black Lives Matter, Committee to Protect Journalists, Human Rights Watch, Reporters Without Borders, International Federation of Human Rights, Public Citizen, Green, and Justice Parties. So you see, the next time she says, yeah, I'm now an activist citizen, well, you haven't been ever in your life. We have every record, everything on you since the time that you hooked up with Bill and you started this kind of dynasty climb. And I just want people to realize that you shame and sully and soil the good reputation of true activists who do not seek political, economic gain and power from the many sacrifice hours that they lend to a cause. Now, for the remainder of the program, we don't have a lot, but we have about 11 minutes. We're going to hear from enough to give you good insights from a law professor explaining why you should not talk to the police officers until you hear what he has to say. Please listen.
I was invited to give you a taste of a typical law school classroom experience here today, and I thought I would take advantage of this opportunity to do something that's been on my mind for a while, to stand up and to proudly say, God bless America, God bless the Bill of Rights, and thank God for the Fifth Amendment. I'm not ashamed to say I'm proud of the Fifth Amendment, and I'm proud to admit on camera and on the internet that I will never talk to any police officer under any circumstances, with all due respect, sir. I'm doing something really extraordinary here today, something you'll almost never see another law professor do as long as you live. I'm really putting myself on the spot here. This was my idea. By my invitation, I have given up half of my time, approximately. I'm giving equal time and the last word to an expert who really knows something about what I'll be talking about. So I'm opening myself up to the possibility that he will contradict me. I was a criminal defense attorney when I was in private practice. So I want to make sure, in fairness to you, if I'm misleading you or giving you a slanted or one-sided presentation, you'll be able to get the last word from somebody else. I'm sure he'll have a lot to teach all of us, including myself. The Fifth Amendment to the United States Constitution provides, no person shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself. And this unfortunate amendment has gotten a bad rap in recent times, much of it tragically and unnecessarily through, as you may have heard, the headlines. There was a recent Regent Law School graduate who was in all the news for a couple of weeks. She was an outstanding former student of mine, and she really got quite a lot of undeserved flack for the fact that she chose to exercise her right to remain silent when the Senate wanted to ask her certain questions that arguably might have tended to incriminate her. All of the world was aghast. The Christian community in particular looked at this and said, how could a Christian do such a thing? How could a Christian take the Fifth Amendment? And I said, you go, girlfriend. I do the same thing. I'll do it every time. And I'll want to talk to you about why that's true, but first, a quick listening test. Let me read to you something that was taken out of the newspaper this morning, and I want you to listen to it closely. And I'm giving you a heads up. I'm warning you in advance, which is not fair to you. Not fair to me, but I'm giving you a warning that I'll be quizzing you on this in just a few minutes. This will test your aptitude for legal study and legal practice. Listen closely. It won't take long. Last night, agents of the Norfolk Police Department found three victims of an apparent murder dead in an apartment in the East Ocean View area, the apparent victims of a gangland-style slaying, and possibly the victims of gang-related violence. The police are investigating this as a possible murder and suicide, but right now suspect that the three were all killed by the same individual. No suspects have yet been identified in the slaying, but veteran police detective George Brook has confirmed that police are following up on evidence pointing to the possible involvement of an off-duty naval officer as the perpetrator. The bodies, which were found by the apartment manager at about 8 o'clock in the morning, appear to have been slain sometime earlier in the same evening, probably sometime between midnight and 2 o'clock in the morning. That's it. Those are all the facts I'll ask you to remember, and it won't be for very long either. Let's see how well you do. I'll be quizzing you in just a few minutes. Now, here's the easiest question you'll ever get from a client in all the days of your life. Question, hey, the police are here. They want to talk to me. What should I do? Well, I could give you my answer to that question in case you haven't already guessed it, but why don't we go to a real expert? Justice Robert Jackson, a prosecutor's prosecutor. Like me, he began his private practice in Buffalo, New York, years before I did, and after that he served as general counsel for the Bureau of Internal Revenue, the U.S. Department of Treasury, the Security and Exchange Commission, assistant U.S. Attorney General for the Tax Division, later the Solicitor General and the Attorney General of the United States, and then the chief U.S. prosecutor for the Nuremberg trials. That's an impressive resume. Years later, when he was a justice on the Supreme Court, Justice Jackson stated, quote, any lawyer worth his salt, today we would say his or her, will tell the suspect, his client, in no uncertain terms to make no statement to the police under any circumstances. There's the title of my talk. I'm here to explain to you the surprising and somewhat counterintuitive and admittedly unlikely reasons why Justice Jackson was right. I'm reminded of this because I'm amazed, we're all amazed, by the frequency with which we see newspaper articles coming out all the time from people who really ought to know better, who say, well, I'll talk to the police. I mean, after all, I'm a senator. I'm O.J. Simpson. I'm an experienced, highly polished individual. I've got a lot of experience with public relations, even criminal defense attorneys. There was a local news story here in the Virginia Pilot just a couple of months ago about an experienced criminal defense lawyer who ended up getting convicted of criminal assault because he talked to the police. He was accused of having assaulted another attorney in the hallway. There were no other witnesses to this. A woman said that he grabbed her by the throat during an argument over a case. He denied it. At trial, it was his word against hers. He said, I did not even touch her. But unfortunately for him, when the police had approached him earlier and said, would you be willing to answer some questions? He said, sure, why not? I'm an attorney. I'm a criminal defense attorney. I'm savvy. I'm sophisticated. I've got oratorical prowess. I'm accustomed to dealing with the police, by all means. And then there was a conversation that was not recorded. When the case went to trial, it was no longer his word against hers, because when he testified at trial, I never touched her. The officer took her to the stand and testified, well, when I met with him, he said he did put his hand on her throat, but just as a joke. Then he had to take the stand again and say, that's not true. I never said that. I never admitted to you that I, now it's his word against two people. Who's telling the truth? We'll never know for sure, but he was found guilty. Now, here's part of the problem. The heart of the problem, as Justice Breyer on the U.S. Supreme Court explained in 1998, is, quote, the complexity of modern federal criminal law codified in several thousand sections of the United States Code and the virtually infinite variety of factual circumstances that might trigger an investigation into a possible violation of the law make it difficult for anyone to know in advance just when a particular set of statements might later appear to a prosecutor to be relevant to some investigation. One expert on criminal law recently noted that estimates of the current size of the body of federal criminal law vary, although it has been reported that the Congressional Research Service can no longer even count the current number of federal crimes. That's right. Even the federal government has lost count. These laws are scattered over all 50 pages of the U.S. Code, encompassing roughly 27,000 pages. Worse yet, these statutes often incorporate by reference to the provisions of administrative regulations. Estimates of how many such regulations exist are even less well settled, although the ABA thinks there may be nearly 10,000. Here's one of those 10,000 federal criminal statutes on the book that you probably never heard about. It's called the Lacey Act. 16 U.S.C. Section 3370 says it's a federal offense for any person to import, export, transport, sell, receive, acquire, or purchase any fish or wildlife or plant taken, possessed, transported, or sold in the violation of any law, treaty, or regulation of the United States or any Indian tribal law or any state or any foreign law. People have been convicted in federal court for violating this statute because they brought back a bony fish from Honduras, not knowing that Honduran law, not American, but Honduran law, forbade the possession of the bony fish. People have been convicted under the List law because they were found in possession of what's called a short lobster, a lobster that's under a certain size. Some states forbid you from possessing a lobster if he's under a certain length. It doesn't matter if he's dead or alive. It doesn't matter if you killed it or if he died of natural causes. It doesn't even matter if you acted in self-defense. Did you know that? Did you know it could be a federal offense to be in possession of a lobster? Admit it. Raise your hand if you did not know that. There's the problem. And that's only one of 10,000 different ways. You know, the government gets pretty upset when people like me instruct the client, people like me and Justice Jackson, don't talk to the police, don't answer any questions. But, you know, they can't have it both ways. You people, you've got 10,000 different ways of convicting us. Good for you, but, you know, with the bitter comes to the sweet, with the good comes to the bad. That's 10,000 different ways my client might unknowingly implicate himself in some sort of a criminal transaction. One of the reasons I decided to give this talk, I recently received a phone call from a former student of mine, a Regent Law School graduate, who may be watching this online. We're putting it on the internet. And he told me, hey, I've been approached by the Internal Revenue Service. They want to ask me a couple of questions. They ask if I'd be willing to. But they say that I'm not a suspect. And I know in my heart I don't think I've done anything wrong in violation of the Internal Revenue Service provisions. Lord have mercy. There's no man on earth, there's no woman in this country who can honestly say with complete confidence, I know I have never violated any provision of the Internal Revenue Code. He said, but they say I'm not a suspect and I know I've done nothing wrong. It's okay if I talk to him. I said, no, you tell them you will not talk to them without immunity. I explained to him why that was true and he never heard from them again. Okay, why you should never talk to the police. Let me just spell it out for you. Let me make it plain to all of you. These are the top 10 reasons. I shouldn't really lie to you. I don't really have 10. I don't have time for 10, but I've got time for 8 and that'll be close enough. Number one, and this really ought to be good enough, contrary to what you laymen instinctively and naturally suppose, it cannot help. There is no way it can help you. Plenty of folks think that it can, and they're always wrong. You cannot talk your way out of getting arrested. Officer Brooke, you've interviewed thousands of criminal suspects. How many times in your experience have you approached someone, asked if you could ask them some questions because prior to the interview you had some evidence pointing to his possible guilt? And because of the extraordinary persuasiveness and eloquence with which he articulated his innocence, you said, oh, sorry, never mind. Bad call, my bad, I won't, and he talked you out of arresting him.
You know the answer to that.
Never, it never happens. I've often asked other criminal defense attorneys, in all of your experience, have you ever once had a case where you looked back in hindsight and said, thank God my client talked to the police? They laugh at me. They say, you've got to be kidding me. You cannot help you. You can't talk your way out of getting arrested. And contrary to what you might suppose if you never studied the rules of evidence, what you tell the police, even if it's exculpatory, cannot be used to help you at trial. Because it's what we call hearsay. Under the rules of evidence, specifically Rule 801 D2A, if you want to look it up, Everything you tell the police, as the saying goes, can and will be used against you, but it cannot be used for you. From time to time, I've known attorneys who tried to call to the stand a police officer and say, "Officer, would you tell the jury what my client told you, because what my client told him is actually good for my case?" If you tried that at trial, the prosecutor will object to that as hearsay, and the judge will agree. The police will not be allowed, at your request, to tell the jury what your client told him, no matter how good it may be for your case. It cannot help. And that ought to be good enough reason. That ought to be reason enough to keep your mouth shut. But if you're not persuaded, let me go talk about a couple of others. Number two, obviously one of the most obvious. If your client is guilty, as many of them are, but even if he's not, even if he's innocent, he may well admit his guilt with no benefit in return. Now, of course, many of you are thinking to yourself, well, what's so wrong about that? I mean, shouldn't guilty people be confessing? Confession's good for the soul. It's good for law enforcement. It's good for the prisons. Yes, yes, sure, all those things are true. And like the rest of you, if I or anyone close to me is ever the victim of some sort of a serious crime, I hope they get the right guy. I hope they convict him. I hope they put him away. We all feel that way. Hey, but what's the rush, friends? You don't got to admit your guilt the first time they come by to meet with you. In federal court, 86% of all defendants plead guilty at some point before trial. If your client is guilty and really ought to punish and really ought to have a go through some sort of a cleansing act of contrition and fess up and admit his guilt, there'll be plenty of time to do that. They almost always do. No need to rush. No need to tell the police something. Wait and see if perhaps your client can work out some sort of an arrangement where maybe he'll make some sort of compensation to the alleged victim, or maybe he'll be able to get some sort of a discount in his sentence. And he'll be treated fairly then, like everybody else who had the benefit of a good lawyer who said, please do not talk to the police. And don't forget, by the way, even if your client only admits things that the police already knew, you might think, well, what harm can it do? He says he wants to talk to the police. All he wants to do is admit that he was there. But the cops know that he was there. All right, go ahead and tell them. Well, how can it hurt? It might hurt if the police officer becomes transferred to Minnesota or deceased or injured or comatose or cannot be located by the time of trial. The case will be dismissed if there's no confession. But if your client admits two things, that confession is freely admissible against him and can be a basis for getting him convicted all by himself.
So there you have some of the reasons, but not all, for having an attorney present. So all you have to do is give a person your name and say, I'd like to speak with my attorney. All right? You never know how they can help you. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on tomorrow's program. Have a nice day.